The White House news conference. President Eisenhower met reporters again today, and there were two big subjects, the Big Four conference and polio vaccine. Reporters pressed Mr. Eisenhower hard on both, as you will hear in a moment. The atmosphere in the news conference room today was urgent. The Big Four meeting had suddenly become a reality, this meeting at the summit. Earlier, the president had been against it. Now, suddenly, he seemed to be for it. Why the change? Reporters found themselves more curious than usual. The Indian Treaty Room, with its antique marble angels hanging from the walls, was filled long before the president came in. And by the time he did come, 2 minutes late, there were 13 reporters standing topside in the balcony. At 10:32, a hush fell over the room. There was a signal from the door. Reporters rose. The president motioned us to sit down. You could tell at a glance, here was a man with a lot on his mind. The tape recorder was turned on, and this is what we recorded. The first voice, the president.
Only one short announcement this morning, ladies and gentlemen. This morning I'm going to have the opportunity to see Mr. McElroy, who is chairman of the White House Conference on Education that we'll meet this year. And it's a conference to which I attach the greatest hopes. For the first time in history, as preliminary to that conference, every one of the 48 states in our territories are having state or territorial conferences on education. We'll bring together their experiences, their ideas and plans, and certainly the whole field of education should get a tremendous boost from the work of these people. And the reason I mention it is because a little later in the morning I may have a formal statement to make after I meet with him. Question.
President Smith of the United Press, could you tell us, sir, your preferences for time and place for a Big Four meeting? I ask this question against the background of rumors or reports from Europe that this country favors a meeting in July in Switzerland.
Well, actually, I have no preference except to the extent that I should like to see the meeting held, if held at all, in one of the so-called neutral countries. You must understand this whole idea is still an exploratory stage. We've issued an invitation because of reasons that finally seem to us to be cogent and would probably such a meeting would probably result in at least some clarification of the air. But our foreign ministers will now meet in Vienna in connection with the Austrian treaty, presumably, and they will decide whether the invitation is acceptable in its terms, its ideas, and then they will discuss such things as place and timing. I would, as I've said often, I'll go anywhere, anytime, if any good is to be done. And this earlier meeting ought to determine whether it seems useful.
Mr. President, Lawrence of the New York Times, could you tell us, sir, some of the reasons why you did change your mind about the feasibility and desirability of a summit conference now and in advance, so to speak, of a protracted foreign ministers meeting?
Well, of course, this business of foreign affairs, things change from day to day. The mere fact that we were to open up the, or it appeared that the Austrian treaty was to be signed, did not in itself seemed to me, as I think I told you in April sometime, a reason for a meeting at the summit. But I said, of course, that situation can change rapidly. Now, there has been a growing sentiment discernible throughout the world that from a meeting like this, something might come. And there has been clear evidence presented through the press, through correspondence, through our contacts, through the diplomatic sources, that there is a vague feeling some good might come out of such a conference. Well, now, when then to hold such a conference? Just to put a stamp of approval on something that may have been done by foreign ministers, or to try to stimulate thought and possibly even to define the areas in which you would expect your foreign ministers to work so that something might be accomplished. Finally, I felt this. This business of trying to reach a clarification of issues, if such a thing is possible, is so important that you can't stand on any other principle except do your utmost as you preserve your own strength of position, as long as you're not sacrificing it, as long as you're not expecting too much. Don't be just stubborn in your refusal to expect anything, but to go ahead and see what you can find about it. Now, it does also do this. It gives a personal opportunity to sense an atmosphere in that circle. Now, then, I think those vague, rather generalized reasons are really lying behind this. There's no expectation on my part that in a few hours, a few days, or a few weeks, this world is going to be turned around. By no means. And I'm not going, if I do go, under any such thought. But I would hope that my own mind will be clarified a little bit. Maybe the platform from which we may later work will be a little clearer even to ourselves. I think this gentleman back here.
There's been much speculation, sir, as to what might be discussed at this meeting. Would it be proper for you to tell us what you think would be the most important topic that could be discussed?
I would think the most important thing could possibly be done at such a meeting would be to define the lines or directions in which we commonly would want our foreign ministers to work to see whether there's any opportunity to relieve the tensions in the world. And beyond that, I don't think you can possibly say what the subject would be. Certainly there would be no agenda except in the most generalized form to talk about a general group of subjects, no agenda in the sense that a foreign minister would normally meet.
Roberts, the Washington Post. To follow that question, is it you have in mind the idea of working on specific matters such as the German unification problem, or are you thinking now that it may be possible to have a larger framework of discussion such as some general East-West settlement in Europe?
I don't think that either of your assumptions is quite correct as I now visualize it. I think that we merely, and I repeat, could define the areas in which people would start to work. Now, when they start to work in any area, you find that affects every other area. There would be no, I think there could be no limitation, and at the same time, you couldn't possibly give an exact description of what you're going to do. You're going to meet, try to discover whether you believe the other people are sincerely hoping to relieve tensions. If so, what are the areas of greatest tension and what can these people do?
Sir, may I ask a further point? You spoke yesterday to the Republican women about disarmament, for example. Would that be included in this type of discussion?
I wouldn't see any possibility, if you're going to relieve tensions, that you didn't have to discuss disarmament. But what I say is, you would neither limit it, you wouldn't exclude it, nor would you necessarily put it down as a particular agenda. I don't believe that such a conference could design a specific agenda for your foreign ministers. You could only describe lines that they would take, the attitudes we have, and the general areas they would explore.
Mr. President, Brandt of St. Louis Post-Dispatch, can you give us any idea of how long the meeting at the summit would take?
I can only tell you what is I've been guessing. I would think that if you met a matter of 3 days, I think it would completely cover the issue, as far as I'm concerned. All the issues could be raised.
And then how long would the foreign ministers meet? Can you guess on that?
I wouldn't guess. Wouldn't guess.
Weeks or months?
Could be.
I wouldn't guess. And, of course, after the foreign ministers meet, then you can establish, if any progress is made at all, what you would probably establish would be numbers of meetings of experts in particular fields.
Then
but I really can't, and there's no use really of speculating as to what the outcome on the chain of events can be. This is certainly experimental.
Go back to your old plan that after the foreign ministers had come to some agreement, the big four would then meet again to formalize.
I wouldn't know. It would certainly, in that case, have to be a... We would have to have developed a sufficient confidence in what had been done, and it would have to have sufficient significance to us and to the world that it'd be worthwhile to make a formal signing something, let us say, historic. I think this gentleman.
Again, down from the sum of the moment, sir, this has to do with a domestic problem. And as you predicted last week, the Louisville and Nashville railroad strike was settled through the appointment of an arbitrator. And I wonder whether you would care to comment on the role of arbitration in labor management disputes generally, sir.
Oh, I don't think it'd be profitable to launch in a discussion of my ideas about it, except I would express the greatest of gratification that both sides here finally accepted arbitration and the mediation board and conciliation board was successful bringing them together, and this strike has been settled. It's a very great boon to the South, and I'm very gratified.
The point, I mean, there's a strike still going on, the telephone strike, and that perhaps...
I'll be just as happy when that's settled.
No arbitration, sir?
Well, they're working. They're, the mediation service is still in contact with both of them.
And therefore, the pattern of arbitration would be just as useful in other...
Oh, my opinion, yes.
Strike. Thank you.
I don't like that.
Sir, could you give us your views on whether you would favor a congressional delegation or a small group of congressional leaders going to this meeting at the summit with your party?
Well, I wouldn't know yet. You must remember, there was a little invitation issued, and we sort of described in our note what we thought would be a good thing. We don't know a good procedure. We don't know whether that's going to be accepted. I would say this. When it comes down to anything definitive that's going possibly to result in any kind of a formal agreement or treaty, then I would say it's always profitable to have a congressional committee with you.
Mr. President, May Craig of the Maine Papers. I had understood you to say that you would require deeds from the communists before you would meet with them to show their pacific attitude. Have you had any deeds of that description?
Well, one of them I described was the signing of the Austrian Treaty. Now, it's true, I talked about others, but if this one will indicate what they are apparently trying to make it appear to indicate, well, then I'm going to try to find out whether it's absolutely sincere.
Mr. President, Larry Bird, Chicago Tribune. Would you regard it as possible or likely that the Far Eastern situation might come up at such a conference? That is, that there wouldn't be any geographic limits?
Oh, there might be an agreement to limit it in order to look for success, to limit it to certain areas. I would say at this top one, if you had the heads of government, heads of government, at the one conference, I'd think the general conversations would tend to go around the world and be global in character.
The Hoover Commission has reported a number of wasteful shopping practices on the part of the military. For instance, a 60-year supply of hamburger. And up on the Hill, they're complaining that they can't seem to find anybody in the military to take responsibility for these things. I was wondering, sir, if you have any plans to hold anybody speak to the fire about this.
Am I getting a bad reputation around here? I do know that Secretary Wilson and Mr. Hoover themselves have been in conference. I believe exchanged letters and are getting together so that they can together study these things in details and see where difficulties are. I think there can be a lot of misunderstanding arise about just a bare fact. You may have a lot of hamburger if you've got it for, and I understand this, is for emergency purposes used by the Navy and the Marines. I'm told that if you actually fed it out to all the messes, that you'd consume it in 5 days, but you don't do that. It's held for emergency purposes, and therefore, at the amount that you consume it, I don't know how many years it would last.
You think that's not too much, sir?
Well, I haven't examined what they have, but I'll tell you this. If you kept in your ammunition supplies, for emergency ammunition supplies, only the amounts that you use yearly for practice, you'd be in an awful defensive fix. Now, I don't know. I haven't looked up the details. I don't intend to, because Secretary Wilson ought to be capable of doing that, and I think you'd get an answer from him.
Mr. President, Marvin Aerosmith of the AP, Senator Margaret Chase Smith is telling the Republican Women's Conference today that she hopes with all her heart that you will run again, but that her present impression is that you will not do so. Do you have any idea where she got such an impression?
Well, of course, I would like to thank her for her complimentary opinion of me. But as for the rest of it, I haven't the slightest idea where she got that impression.
Reston of the New York Times. Mr. President, in view of the confusion over the polio vaccines, would you give us your view as to where the responsibility lies in this situation? Is there a government responsibility here?
Well, there's certainly a government responsibility to take leadership in this thing and see the thing goes ahead as far as fast as it possibly can. Now, every conference I've had has been that the firms have cooperated perfectly. They have no, the firms making this, they have no complaint whatsoever. The entire amount of this product is contracted for by the foundation. There will be no other orders filled of any kind until that contract is completely fulfilled. I believe it's either until all children from 5 to 9 are vaccinated or until a given date sometime in the future, whichever is earlier, I think. I would say this. By sometime later this week, during the week, I will have the final report of all the agreements, all the recommendations of the advisory board and the secretary of HEW. By Monday or Tuesday, I ought to be in shape to determine if there's any more action of any kind that I'm expected to take.
The question that is being asked, the question that our mail reflects, is why many of these things that are now being done were not done before all the hoopla about the original announcement on April
1st. I think it was merely because of two things. The great pressure to bring this out as quickly as they believed, had any reason to believe it was a useful and effective product, and therefore that some of the exhaustive tests through which such an product normally goes, probably they tried to shortcut a little bit. I don't know. The report will have to show. I'm not a scientist, as you well know.
President,
I think that gentleman has.
Smith, you peek, and you used a phrase two questions back on that they probably try to shortcut a little bit. To whom are you referring to?
I meant that the scientists, in putting this out, probably thought that they had used all of the regular methods, but probably didn't use some of the more exhaustive ones that they may think now are should be double-checked. I don't, look, I'm speculating on that particular point. I say I haven't got my report, and I'm not making any statement as to be taken as authoritative on that point. But they have stopped the vaccinations while they take a double check on something. Now, what that is, I'm not sure.
Mr. President, Sarah McClendon of the El Paso Times. Sir, I believe you received a letter from Congressman Bell the other day setting forth the great social as well as economic effects of the drought on people in small towns as well as farms and ranches. The Agriculture Department has set June 15th, I believe, as the end of much of the temporary relief for the people in the drought area in the hay program and other forms. I wonder if you've given any thought to a long-range program that would take into consideration the economic and social effects of the drought in the Southwest.
Well, I don't know of any time that the matter isn't under discussion. Certainly for the 2 years and more that I've been here, there's always been some area that's in drought. And we've taken up this matter with Congress. We've done what we can, and I don't know how you can take up really long-range plans for such of such kind, because you hope that the drought doesn't last forever. A drought is supposed to be an emergency.
Well, sir, I believe Mr. Bell set forth that these people are going to need some works, projects, plans in a long-range way, as well as temporary relief.
Well, I'm not prepared to talk about this one. I guess this gentleman.
Gronsky of ABC. Mr. President, a considerable misgiving seemed to have arisen as to the efficacy of the sought polio vaccine in the medical sense. Could you, from your knowledge and your conversations with the experts on this, tell us whether the U.S. government still regards the sought polio vaccine as able to do what everyone originally thought it would do, that is, to prevent polio with 80 to 90% of those who are injected with the vaccine?
I believe it absolutely. I can't say what the government, that's a lot of people. I know what I believe. I believe these experts. I think they're very competent. And I believe it can do it. Now, there have been, I think, something like 52 cases of polio out of more than 5 million injections. Now, they want to find out merely whether these 52 cases had any relationship at all to the fact that they were injected. And they're trying to be doubly safe, and I applaud their caution in this matter. But I believe it just implicitly that this will, within a measurable time, really eliminate polio in this country.
Mr. President, then it's not the medical theory that's in question here at all. It's merely the manner that the vaccine is being manufactured.
Well, that's what I think.
What kind of progress would you say your legislative program has been making in Congress so far this year? And what kind of support would you say Republican congressmen have been giving to this program?
Well, the question is too generic, too broad for me to discuss this morning. I'd say this, that anyone that would attempt to predict or to comment very much on progress of Congress at this time has forgotten that Congress is capable of doing an awful lot and sometimes in a week, and then can seem to have a period of inaction almost for a month. It's rather erratic in its output. So I would say, I mean erratic in the rate of output. I'd say this, as far as I'm concerned, things are coming along pretty well.
Has a decision been reached to allow Russian agricultural specialists to come to this country to study agriculture here?
Well, I would like to answer definitively, but I'm not certain. Now, we've discussed it, and I, generally speaking, I think it has, but I'm a little bit uncertain whether I'm talking about something that's yet been finally crystallized. That's my difficulty. Actually, I think it has been straightened out. Yes.
President, Warren Dumont Television. Yesterday, the House apparently killed the hopes for Hawaii and Alaska for statehood for some time to come. I wonder if you'd comment on that, sir.
I've always favored, as you know, the separation of these two bills and handling each one on its merits. Now, you put them together and you instantly accumulate for your bill the opposition that applies to either one and to both. You take the aggregate and apply it to each one. I'd like to see the bills separated and always have stood for that, and I'd still like to see it.
Mr. President, I wondered if you'd have any comment on Zhukov's statements over the last weekend in the light of your letters to him.
No. They have no connection whatsoever, the two instances.
Mr. President, I wonder if you've had an opportunity to see a report on the latest Soviet disarmament plan.
On what?
What has been described as a recent Soviet disarmament plan submitted to the...
You mean the one that's submitted through the Disarmament Commission in London? Well, I've just had a chance to glance at it. No, not at the moment. It's the whole question is so confused. It has still some of the elements they've always had in it. They want to get rid of one kind. We'd like to get rid of everything. It's something that has to be studied before you really can comment on it.
Mr. President, Charles Von Prince, CBS News. Over the weekend, sir, photographs of the May Day celebrations in Moscow indicated that ex-Premier Malenkov has now risen somewhat within his party again and now ranks third, directly behind Bulganin and Khrushchev. I wonder, sir, on the whatever indications you may have received through our intelligence people, whether this does indicate that there is still an unsettling thing going along in Moscow as to who actually is the supreme ruler.
Well, I don't know whether this has any significance about it, but there is certain that it certainly seems to be the case that the situation is not what it was when Stalin was alive. He seemed to have the situation in personal control every minute of the day. In other words, he was a true dictator. This is a somewhat different system.
Mr. President,
have you had a chance to examine General Sarnoff's recommendations on Cold War strategy?
Well, he came to see me about it. We had a long talk on it.
I was wondering if you looked at the report that he submitted.
Well, he discussed some of the things that he was going to put in it, and he went around to talk to various members of the government. I believe thoroughly in General Sarnoff's general proposition that when you're spending all the money we are for direct defense through security establishments, it is just unthinkable to limit ourselves too much in this whole field of information service that is necessary to a Cold War.
Mr. President, I didn't know I could ask you a question. In reference to your reply on North Korea, do you regard that as a satisfactory treaty, or are we agreeing to it because we cannot get better?
Oh, we agreed to this treaty way back in 1949. And Section 16 has been eliminated completely, which had to do with repatriation. And there are still some details to be ironed out, but as far as we're concerned, this government has agreed to that treaty for many, many months.
President. Robert Spivak, New York Post. Last week, you told us that no child would be denied the vaccine because of inability to pay. And afterwards, there seemed to be a little confusion about just what sort of plan of operation you had in mind. As I understood it, the federal government, if necessary, would buy up all the Salk vaccine. But could you tell us how indigence would be determined and also whether it would be administered free of charge?
Well, of course, I can't tell you all the details of how we'd do it, but I will tell you this. The second I find out that any child in the United States is denied this by reason of lack of money to pay for it, I'm going to move as hard as I can, and I'll certainly make someone listen to me very earnestly before there's any defeat on that one.
Blair of the New York Times. Over the weekend, the Surgeon General of the United States changed his position on the going ahead with the Salk vaccine. Was that purely a medical decision, or was that a decision of policy within the administration?
Well, I don't understand any such question. I've discussed that two or three times this morning. That was the doctor's opinion and his decision. The government would know no more about the factors in this than this body would. What would you know what to do with such technical things? I wouldn't. Now, the doctors have to decide what to do in such cases. They decided it wasn't fair to go ahead until they checked more. That's all there was to it.
Thank you, Mr. President.
And thus, 29 minutes after it began, President Eisenhower's 68th news conference came to the usual sudden stop as newsmen charged out the door for telephones to file their stories to the world. As you heard, the President had quite a bit to say about the Salk polio vaccine. But perhaps his most eloquent act came after the news conference was over. The President was in his office, posing for pictures with Mrs. Ovita Habi, Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, and some prominent educators. We heard the President say this to Mrs. Habi: "Well, I'm glad my grandson has had his shot." The President had expressed absolute confidence in the vaccine, as you've heard. But that little remark to Mrs. Habi perhaps told more about how he felt than the hundreds of words at the news conference: "I'm glad my grandson had his shot." One footnote to our tape recording: the White House edited out two questions as of no general interest. Otherwise, you heard it all. This is Ray Scherer, NBC White House correspondent.